Hello, hello, and welcome to Cheers to Leaving. My name is Rachel.
And I'm Cameron.
And we are so excited for today's episode. Get ready to join us on a journey with the Sexvangelicals podcast. Julia Postum and Jeremiah Gibson are the co-hosts of the podcast Sexvangelicals, the sex education the church didn't want you to have. They are both Boston-based licensed psychotherapists and certified sex therapists who work with clients in Massachusetts. They currently live in Utrecht, the Netherlands. Did I say that right?
Yes.
You got a little extra phlegm in there, too. That was great. Utrecht.
Yeah. Utrecht. Utrecht. Right. Perfect. They specialize in helping couples with negative religious backgrounds discover sexuality that works for their partnership. And a little bit about them, they enjoy traveling to places that tend to fly under the radar, long-distance hiking, cooking very spicy food, unexpected conversations, and introverted days filled with reading and drinking fancy tea. Welcome to Cheers to Leaving, Julia and Jeremiah.
Thank you. I'm excited. I'm a fan of your podcast, so this is an honor.
Thank you. So to get started, I would just like to get to know you guys a little bit better. I know, like, just from listening to your podcast, I know a little bit about you guys already. But for people who are just meeting you, and because of today's topic, I would love to kind of just get into your deconstruction journey a little bit and ultimately how it affected your relationship, since that's kind of what we're talking about today. So whoever wants to go first, throw them to the lions, whichever one.
Okay.
such a good evangelical perspective.
I grew up in a fundamentalist Baptist community, which shaped every part of my growing up experience. My community was insular. The three pillars of my community were my Baptist church, my Christian camp, and my exceptionally tiny Christian school. I did graduate with three people, so large.
What a big class.
Large class size. My ex-husband joked that I was homeschooled, and I think he was basically accurate.
Pretty much.
That is a fair assessment. I think about deconstruction like a Jenga tower, and my Jenga tower was like intact. So when I went to Christian College, Calvin, now University in Grand Rapids, Michigan, I was deeply passionate about all things Christianity. And like so many of us from Christian colleges and universities, I also have a youth ministry minor. So I can add that to my bragging records as well. So the first real Jenga block to get dislodged was actually around race. I was lucky enough to be a part of the probably most liberal section of a Christian university, which is not all that liberal, but my background is in social work. So when I started taking classes on systems theory and sociology, I started to unpack the political messages of my growing up experiences. Those were the first Jenga blocks to get dislodged. I still was pretty embedded within purity culture restrictions. So when I got married at the very mature age of 22, I had this idea that I was more deconstructed than I was, because I was really passionate about going to churches that were committed to anti-racism and focused on the rights of LGBTQ people. I hadn't unpacked my own queerness. That's a whole other story. So I really had a very different idea of myself and my religion than was accurate. And when I got married and cried every single day on my honeymoon because the sex was devastating, that dislodged like six Jenga blocks right there.
and I was, devastating sex will do that.
Nothing is off limits with sex therapists. So if you want to know more about the devastating sex or any other sex, I'm happy to share any details.
I mean, I wouldn't mind a little detail. If you're going to use the word devastating, I'm like, oh.
How shall we set the mood for this?
What kind of music do we?
Yeah.
And it genuinely is like absolutely one of those situations that is simultaneously hilarious and heartbreaking. So please laugh because it is funny. You will not hurt my feelings. But
that was a very Jeb Bush comment of you.
Oh, you can laugh with me. I've got all kinds of stories. I was actually a client in sex therapy before I became a sex therapist. So when my ex-husband and I got back from our honeymoon, I was like, okay, this is not going well at all. So we're gonna go to sex therapy. Where we lived in Ohio did not have great sexual health services. So our first stint in sex therapy was also devastating. So lots of devastating markers along the way. But we did eventually get to a great sex therapist in Boston who absolutely changed my life. But the first couples therapy session that we did, she asked me about my background. I said, I grew up in a fringy Christian community. However, I don't think it impacted my sexuality all that much whatsoever. She didn't laugh at me.
Please laugh.
On the inside, I think that's what was going on.
You're like, but I'm fine. That doesn't have anything to do with why we're here today. And she's just like,
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. 1,000%, because I've now been in the experience of my previous therapist. And you can ask me any questions about this as we continue talking. But ultimately, even after some amazing couples therapy, amazing sex therapy, my ex-husband and I decided that our relationship wasn't sustainable. And the same communities that set us up to get married young, the same communities that were cheering us along, were then also the communities that like berated us. And they were the communities that essentially put us into a canoe in the ocean without paddles. And when we capsized and almost drowned, they were like, wow, you failure sinners, you're trash.
Yeah. Yeah. That is how they like to send people off on their marriage journey.
And
especially in a canoe, who canoes anymore?
Right. And so then,
suck.
Did you? I actually hate canoes. Kayaks are great.
Kayaks are so much fun.
I was about to use the kayaking example, and then I was like, no, canoes suck. Canoes suck. So that's why I'm going to say a canoe in the ocean. But I eventually did study sex therapy training, and that was really probably the final piece in my Jenga tower, that after the, inherent confusion about the sinfulness of spaghetti straps to graduating with no one else, the devastating honeymoon sex, the sex therapy. I mean, it all came really crashing down when I went to the University of Michigan for sex therapy training.
I bet it did.
It sure did.
It's also funny how like education always seems to be like the path leading out of like, well, Christianity for one, but just like harmful belief systems. Like you just start to educate yourself about the world and learn about it and learn about systems. And you're like, oh my God. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you ended your journey at the University of Michigan, essentially not ended your journey, but that's kind of like was your full out, I'm deconstructed from this. Is that around the time you got divorced or did you divorce before that?
I got divorced essentially at the end of my training. And I imagine that to some degree, I will be deconstructing throughout the rest of my life. And what I mean by that is I can think about multiple situations, even just in the past month in my relationship with Jeremiah, in which something will happen. And if I slow down enough and reflect on it, whether it's about sexuality or something else, I realize, oh, that's some residue from fundamentalist Christianity. That's some residue from purity culture. And it can be some real sticky stuff. Got to get out the extra magic eraser for that.
Yeah, it's crazy how much of what you think is you and your ideas and your values and what you like and what you dislike is, like, honestly just leads back to all right. of that. And then it comes up and you're like, ew, like, what? Like, I thought I already, like, dealt with this. I thought I already, like, you know, picked that apart and then put it away. And then you're, like, thinking and your biases and things still come up and you're like, oh, that's, like, I don't know. I agree with you. I don't think we will ever fully be rid of it. It will just be, like, kind of someone we have, not someone, but something that is, like, continually there. And I think that eventually we get used to it. We get better at, like, ignoring that, say we've healed a lot from it, but I think it's so ingrained that you're going to forever be working through some of this stuff, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, those experiences too tend to be like a form of trauma, right? So, and trauma tends to stick with you and you just kind of learn to live with it, right?
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
We're talking about trauma. That's what we're talking about. That's why it doesn't go away.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Do either of you know Dr. Laura Anderson?
Yes.
Yeah. So her new book, When Religion Hurts You, is essentially all about the concept of what is religious harm? And how does that mimic the experiences of trauma? So it does stick real deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I don't know if this will ever happen, if people in the church and in Christianity and evangelicals will ever acknowledge that the things that happen to us are religious trauma. But I almost feel like when we add both those words together, people kind of are like roll their eyes a little bit, especially people that are still in the church. Cause they're like, especially if they didn't have a bad experience with the church. My husband is one of those people. So it's like they were raised in a very progressive, like Christian, like not a big deal. Like you didn't eat, breathe, you know, Christianity. It was just sort of something you did on like Sundays and Wednesdays. And like, it was very like chill and like, you know, an experience that like you can still come away with like religious trauma to some extent, but it's not like my experience. And every time I go into it, he's like, I think you were in a cult. And I was like, I know.
Like, I'm like doing a podcast about this. I know.
What do you mean you think? Like, yes, I know. Like, like, why are you so angry at Christians? I'm like, bro. So
yeah. Sounds like a new problem.
Yeah, this is a yeah, exactly. So I think when we put those two words together, sometimes depending on people's experiences, they can kind of just be like, was it really trauma? And you're like, yes.
Yeah. And I even wrestled with that for such a long time because I didn't want to be judged or appear dramatic, which is also a label that we put on folks who might have that experience, especially women. Oh, you're exaggerating. That wasn't yes. actually as bad as you're saying that it was. When actually, mm-hmm. no, being terrified as a 5, 6, 7-year-old about going to hell, being terrified about the rapture, knowing that adult men could sexualize you before puberty, like that does just create like massive, devastating experiences at the time, but long lasting devastation as well.
And that's well before you get to the devastating sex of your honeymoon.
I know, right?
Yeah. Devastating is the word.
Devastating is the word of the podcast. Today's theme is devastation.
Today's theme is devastating.
It's like we're on Sesame Street, except really dark.
The word of the day is not. I just got an immediate flashback to all the Sesame Streets where they're like, the word of the day.
Devastating.
Okay. So do you... I hate to bring this back up, but I am curious what was devastating about it.
Yeah.
Unless you don't want to talk about it, but you did say you were happy to talk about it, but we don't have to. I'm just a curious little human being.
No, we can totally talk about it. So I was very excited for the honeymoon sex that my Christian community promised. Like, pumped.
Yeah.
I was... Cannot express.
They filled that shit up so hard where you're like, sex is going to be amazing.
Yeah. I cannot express like how thrilled I was for the sex. And that's ultimately why I got married when I got married. And I wouldn't have said it at the time.
You wanted to have sex.
Right. That is the reason that I got married when I did. And I grew up in such a repressive type of community that I wasn't, as most, if not all people, I wasn't able to move from crushing anxiety and pressure around sexuality into something that could be anywhere near remotely fun. And so as the week progressed, I just hated sex and I dreaded it. And it didn't feel good physically. It didn't feel good emotionally. And what I tell people is that really my world crumbled at that point. And I, similarly to what you were describing, Rachel, I was hesitant to say that for a long time because it sounds dramatic. Or I was afraid that it would sound dramatic. Like, okay, so sex on your honeymoon wasn't great, but like, it's just sex or it's just your honeymoon. Like, how could that really have hurt you as much as it did? But I grew up learning that my worth was in being a sexually desirable person, in becoming a wife. And even though I was excited about my career, this is where my inherent value stood. And so when I hated sex, when I didn't desire it, and I didn't feel desirable, like everything that I knew about my world was in question. And what made it even more difficult is that I couldn't identify it at the time. I just knew that I was so, so, so sad. And so there really, I wish I had like good stories, although I can tell a funny story for my friend. I wish I had like a good story for it, but nothing really bad happened. And that's actually the whole point of it, that even though there wasn't an act of violence, even though there wasn't massive physical pain, even though I did go to physical therapy later for penetrative pain, it was just a massive disillusionment.
Yeah, it was like your built up idea came crashing down. And
right.
Yeah, especially I feel like the way that the church like teaches men to have sex as well. Not like teaches them, you know what I mean? Like the way that Christian men go into having sex with their wives is like bad. It's just like,
yeah,
it's very much not about the women's pleasure. It's not about connecting. It's sort of just like we do the deed and I experience pleasure. And obviously I'm not saying all relationships are like this, but that's, I feel like that's a very status quo. And so women are like, I don't like sex. And men are like, well, women just don't like sex. And I'm like, well, that is not true. You know, it's just
right.
Like, sir, you are doing it wrong. Right. And yeah, so it is devastating because it's like, yeah, sex can be like that. And of course you wouldn't like it. Of course, right. No one's having fun.
Right. I thought I was asexual for years.
Yes. And sex isn't taught in a, sex isn't taught from a relational perspective. And what I mean by that is in the church, we learn that, sex is things that, you know, men do these certain things, women receive these certain things, even the ways that sex was taught, like in high school, the boys in the youth group would have conversations about
their uncontrollable sexual urges.
Absolutely. I think I actually do not remember what we talked about. I know that those conversations happened. Apparently I blacked them out.
Trauma baby.
Yeah. And then women have, I'm sure Julia, you could talk, Rachel, you could talk about the horrific things that, that y'all heard in these conversations, but sex is about the performance of gender roles. Right. And relationships are about the performance of gender roles, which is very different from the type of sexual health, Julia, that you and I talk about, which is about two people working together to figure out what their likes are, what their interests are, what their fantasies might be, and to work together to develop experiences about how both people might get pleasure and connectedness out of that.
Right. I also felt really alone because
I bet
I didn't know why sex was so terrible. I didn't know why it was making me sad all the time, not just before or after a sexual experience, and the confusion added to it. As a therapist now who works in this area, I hear and see this all the time. And what I also notice is that my clients don't know what's happening either. They're anxious, they're depressed, they don't know how to interact with their partner, and they don't know why their world lost meaning, but it did.
Right.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So kind of on that topic then, because you talk about how it's like, it's something that you build with each other. And as professionals in this field, what is kind of the consensus on situations where the relationships are not established, like one night stands or like situationships or anything like that? Like, is there kind of a difference on how that, how people approach those things in your mind, or how does that play into that?
I would say that if folks can access the sexual health principles, which we can explain, you can apply those to any type of sexual experiences. So I remember talking with a client who was in a fairly conservative religious space, and he was asking me some of my perspectives on sexuality. And as a therapist, you always have to assess to what extent it is appropriate to share certain things. And so what we did is we said, let's just take masturbation, let's take porn, since that we were discussing, let's just take that off the table. Like, what are your values? Mm-hmm. And so a value that he had that many Christians have is the idea that sexuality is holy and sacred. And I would actually agree with that. However, I think like you could have a holy sacred orgy, you can have a holy sacred one night stand, and
amen.
Those experiences are not less than sexual experiences, as long as you're applying good sexual health principles like mutual pleasure and consent and conversations around safety, et cetera, et cetera.
Gotcha. And for the more established relationships, I kind of piqued my interest when you were talking about, ultimately the divorce came from kind of, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but like a fundamental incompatibility with you and your former husband. Did that largely have to do with the lukewarm sex, or like how, like in your guys' opinion, is sex a vital element to relationships, or was it just like a whole thing that was kind of needed to be thrown away?
For me, it was an important part of the relationship, and something that folks in the sex therapy field talk about is the concept of relationship anarchy, which is essentially the idea that you get to define the rules and roles, maybe boundaries of a relationship. So for some couples, they are less interested in sex, or they decide not to be sexual with each other, or that ebbs and flows throughout the course of the life or the relationship span. I don't know if sex would have gotten better with my ex-husband. It might have, but I wasn't willing to wait. And ultimately, sexuality represented a much broader concept of of how we understood ourselves and the world around us. My ex-husband is still, I believe, involved in religious communities, and he's involved in religious communities that I actually deeply respect. So it wasn't a situation where like he was deeply entrenched in like fundamentalist Baptist and I wanted to be a universalist or something. I stepped out of a religious space altogether, and that religious space was still really, really important to him. And I would say that ultimately we couldn't recover from the negative messaging that we had received around gender, relationships, and sexuality. We also had multiple other losses throughout the course of our relationship that just really, really took a toll, and we weren't able to survive. We didn't recover. I don't think that's a failure on either of our parts. But I would credit conservative Christianity as a big factor in my divorce, even though I would also be accountable to a million things that I would have done differently had I had better relationship tools.
Yeah. There's a phrase in the audio community, shit in, shit out, basically that if you don't have whole good inputs, there's nothing you can do to the final product that make it actually sound sound like full and complete. So I kind of hear that as well. And I sense it in a lot of my own relationships that if it doesn't have a good foundation, you're not going to be able to, on an individual level, you know what I mean? You're not going to be able to get that product
right
out.
And ultimately our foundation was Christianity. So yeah. Sex was a big factor, but I think the much bigger factor was like when I pulled Christianity out, like we didn't have anything to hold us together. Like that was everything to our relationship. Same. Our lives revolved around volunteering at church and this shared faith. And the negative sexual experiences that we had were just one symptom, I suppose, of a relationship with a foundation that crumbled and a foundation that didn't give us not just sexual health tools, but relationship tools.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And also I feel like too, in Christianity, marriages are like centered around God. And like very much like God is very much a part of your marriage. And like, even when I was getting married a couple years ago, like I think my husband got a text from his grandma that was like, keep God at the center of your, you know, marriage or relationship and everything is going to be fine. And I was like, that's not how it works, you know. It's like,
well, and not just Rachel, not just God being part of the marriage, but God being part of the pre-marriage as well.
Oh yeah,
right. God being this anxious, condemning like parent sitting in the couch next to you as you and
your for Jesus.
Right. And thinking, Cameron, about some of your questions, and in my relationship, sex is very much the anxiety that developed around sexuality is very much part of the dysfunction from the very beginning.
Yeah.
In your that was previous relationship?
In my previous relationship, okay. Yeah. In my marriage. To the extent, like, we had, I went over to her house. We were 19 when I started dating. Went over to her house. We have an experience where we're fooling around on a couch.
As you do.
And
classic. Beds are off limits.
Hot.
Love a good dry hump.
but seriously.
But really, I feel like in the teen years, dry humping.
We'll get to the dry humping in a minute.
That's the next story
that I'm going to tell Rachel.
And then can we all share a dry humping story?
Yes.
and her dad walks in. And her dad begins to move into this completely moralistic, guilt-tripping type of situation. He takes my ex off. They're gone for like an hour and a half.
You gotta break the woman.
What the hell is going on? He comes back, says some shit to me.
And
that was the end of the sexual relationship.
I don't think your ex-wife ever recovered.
She never recovered from that. No.
Oh, did she ever tell you what happened in that hour and a half?
No. Oh, I asked her. No, I don't want to talk about it. No. And
from her own father.
From her own father. And no. Then moving into the dry humping stories.
anyway.
No. But that was we kept dating through that, of course, and we would move into sexual experiences that would involve dry humping.
Because that's all you could do.
Because that's all we could do.
Through the clothes.
We still figured out how orgasm worked, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Then following orgasm, she would begin to shake. And she would begin to cry. And she would begin to apologize. I'm sorry, Jeremiah. I had no idea what was going on, so I was holding on to her for dear life. I later learned that she was having a panic attack. And that happened, honest to God, easily 30 times. The first time that happened and the time that we got married. And we didn't have language to talk about that. I only learned about that through my studies in psychology and later in sex therapy. But that created a really horrible sexual dynamic where obviously as a result of that, like I and also in performing my good gender roles learned in the church, I would be the one that initiates sex. And she would go with it. And even like hearing me say that, I'm like, oh, gross. Yeah. Yuck. Yeah. But it was either, that, or, you know, more panic attacks would happen. And, the first probably 6 months in the relationship, I would also begin getting criticized. By her for being, quote, too sexual. All you think about is sex. Mm. Like those types of comments, which I'm like, I'm sure that's not true, but I don't really want to argue with you about this. So sure.
So she weaponized the worst parts of what Christianity calls men.
That's right. That's right. And yeah. And so that created a really passive, really not good sexual dynamic. So fast forward, 2016, I began studying sex therapy, sexual health. And the first class that we have is about sex ethics and, specifically the ethics of consent and having a conversation. And I left that class and thought, oh, fuck. I have been like doing this like extremely wrong. We have not been talking about sex. And of course, I haven't done any of like the deconstruction work. I'm still participating in church at this stage, but
but at that point.
In 2016, that's
yes,
right.
Yes.
Thank you. And I apologize. And I say, hey, you know, I am so, so sorry that like these are the ways that sexual experiences have been starting without conversations, without any sorts of interaction. We both just kind of fall into a sexual experience. I don't want to do that again. And my ex is like, okay. And it was kind of a, wait a second. You're even in that, like the level of disconnect from sexuality that was happening. And that was never something that we were able to move into. Interestingly, she ended up having an affair. She was, I think that lines up with the time that she was starting an affair with another person. Mm-hmm. We never figured out a way to talk about sexuality, even through separation, through divorce. So one of the outcomes of evangelical messaging around sexuality is extreme avoidance. And folks doing whatever they can to not talk about the shit that's happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you and I talk about quite a bit on our podcast is, you know, folks, the deconstruction movement in general places folks in this, but especially conversations about sex can often place folks in what we call a two-choice dilemma. You can have the relationship with church. You can have the relationship with sex, but you can't have both of those things. You got to pick one.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, as you guys were saying this, because, you know, for me, like, I grew up in Christianity, but I've always been objective to authority. But it just sounds like from everything you guys have talked about, other people I've heard about, like, there's no winning. Like, there's no,
that's
like,
right.
The goalposts are constantly shifting. There's no way to have a perfect relationship with God and sex, you know?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And to go back to the point about keeping God in the sexual relationship, something that is in retrospect humorous from my honeymoon, because I do have a memory now, is that like we started praying before sex because
no.
I know, yes. I know,
no, do that.
That.
No. I know people who do that or have done that.
Set the mood.
really set the mood.
I like to think of God as some like weird voyeur in the corner of the room because he's always with you and he's always watching.
Just the perv in the corner who wants to watch you have sex with his wife. Like that is
actually
what, like that's what we treat him as. And I was like, I don't think he wants to be here. Yeah. Stop asking him to come here.
God does not want to cuckold.
So that did happen for a long time.
Wait, oh, that you prayed
the prayer before sex.
Yeah, before sex.
And God entering into a cuckolding relationship with you.
Right.
God like, sitting in the corner.
Like, sex isn't working. We got to invite more of God into this.
Dude, that just makes me think, like, when people do that and they say really, like, sexual things revolving around Jesus or like masturbation, like, oh, I invite God. So, and then I didn't have the urge to do it anymore. And I'm just like, stop. Like, you have to stop like inviting God and be like talking about God surrounding masturbation or sex or anything like that, because it just feels like you want to fuck Jesus. And I need you to stop.
I mean, have you seen that hot white bod?
It's at this point that I should also say that my first career is in worship ministry, in which half of the songs are about sexual relationships with Jesus. So,
mm-hmm.
Yes. I want to know you. I want That's to touch right. you. I want to see
Come
your face.
Me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fill me up.
Fill me with your spirit.
Yeah, your spirit.
Right.
Spirit semen.
Right.
All the same.
Yeah, it's bad. And like, I don't understand how they haven't figured it out yet.
But one of the things that's really hard about our work and often sad about our work is one of the ways that folks do figure that out is through sex therapy. When we talk about the sexual health principles, Julia, that you mentioned, Cameron, that you were asking about earlier, you know, that for a lot of folks kind of holds the mirror up for folks and realizing, oh, like, first of all, the shit that I've been learning about sex, about my body, about communication, that's very different from what you and Julia are talking about, or me and Julia are talking about as couples therapists, as professionals. This seems really, really off. And so being in that double bind where I either choose church, I either choose my sexual relationship, like at the expense of church, like that also comes with a lot of grief. That also comes with a lot of sadness. That also comes with a lot of goodbyes. And one of the things I think a lot of couples therapists miss who aren't familiar with this type of work is the significant amount of grief that's also involved in this work. Grief around information that our former or younger selves didn't get. And, you know, the sadness that comes up, like, the oh, fuck, how the hell am I like 33 at that time and just now like having my first conversation about consent? That's something that should have been taught to me at 12,
yeah.
13, 10, 6.
Sure. And I'm thinking about as a therapist who believes in going to therapy, I remember before my divorce, I was seeing a therapist. She was the first person that I said, I don't know if I want to stay married. And in our work around what probably all four of us would call deconstruction, her commentary as someone who was Jewish and actually didn't have a lot of information about conservative Christianity. What she said to me is, it sounds like you experienced a developmental loss.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting to have a therapist reflect that back to me, like, oh, actually a lot of important milestones were robbed from me.
That's right.
And at the time I was 28 and I was 28 trying to do the work and have the relationships and the experiences that someone much younger than me would have. And for me, that was, still is to some extent, a big part of the grief.
That's right.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that when thinking about this episode that we were going to have, because I fully feel even now that I am entering or in the process of adolescence as like a 31-year-old and not a 15-year-old. And it's really hard and confusing. And I think it's also really hard when you're married already. And when, I mean, it's just really hard. And so I think, I don't know, like, what do you talk, like, what do you suggest to your clients, or what do you, like, how do you deal with this when your clients are, you know, having this experience that you just talked about?
Yeah. First of all, Rachel, I think you're absolutely right about the connection with adolescent development as a 30 something, or as a whatever age you are, who are listening to this, and the sense of developmental loss. I think that there is an urge to, once you begin to kind of move out of the church, to kind of completely like disconnect yourself from the church and kind of dive into sexuality and into different sexual experiences. There's a huge volume of infidelity that happens in the church that I think is connected with attempts at deconstruction. I either fully going into deconstruction. I mean, you and I talk about this. We've experienced this, or this experience, like with my ex, like trying to have it both ways. I think that's one thing. And when we talk about affairs, when we talk about infidelity, like, no shame from that perspective. But one of the communication elements that's key to infidelity is secrecy, like sexuality, mm-hmm. sexual experiences that aren't talked about. That aren't discussed. I think that we see this with a lot of other types of sexual experiences as well, kind of rushing in, moving really quickly into sexual experiences without really taking the time to reflect. Julia, much like what you were saying, like, what are the actual losses that I've had?
Right.
And sometimes you can make up for some of those losses through experiences as an adult, but often the ways that you kind of make up for those losses involve something much more therapeutic, something much more in need of professional guidance, professional assistance.
And the desire to make up that developmental loss is totally valid.
Totally.
Right? Totally. And, I had a thought that just slipped my head. Right. I think one of the other myths that exists in the deconstruction world is, like, the first Sunday you don't go to church, you're going to have the best sex of your life because you don't believe in purity culture anymore. You're divorced or whatever else the fuck it is. You're like, all right, like, now sex is going to be awesome. But the same thing can happen when you leave a Christian space, similarly to what happens when folks get disillusioned with honeymoon sex, right? Sometimes the same disillusionment can happen after you deconstruct or after you leave a religious community, because you still don't have the knowledge, skills, or resources. You're learning them for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like I went in two different phases of deconstruction, and one was right after. So I got pregnant young, because sex ed. And right. So, and obviously the church just fucking ran right over me with that one. So I think that that was like part of me just sort of being like, you guys suck. Like, I don't want to be here. And so,
yeah. Right.
And then my ex sucked too, because he was like hugely narcissistic. And there was definitely like emotional abuse going on and mental abuse, but things that you don't realize, because again, like when you're in this very religious environment, and also like, they're not talking to you again about consent. They're not talking to you about like your sexuality. And I was like super sexual. But I would get shamed for that from him as well. He'd be like, you just like want to like have an orgasm. And I was like, fuck yeah, I do. Like,
yeah.
And I'm 16 years old, baby, let's go. And, and I wasn't even having sex then at that point. It was just sort of like this, you know, this
dry humping.
Yeah, it's like dry humping at that point. And, but you know, then feeling like massive guilt. And then I would feel like there's something wrong with me. And then once we did end up getting pregnant, I remember him blaming me, because he'd be like, you instigated this. Oh, like, you're the Jezebel.
Oh, shit.
And so,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. I mean,
beep, boop, technical error.
So I think what I was saying was just guilt, massive guilt, shame, blah, blah, blah. The things that come from being in a relationship with a Christian guy and getting pregnant. But I also realized too, as I was leaving that relationship, that started deconstructing, that not all dicks are the same size, and some of them are so much better. I have never seen one as small as my ex's to this day. So thank God, not thank God, I don't know, thank the universe, I didn't end up with him. So I went through my first, I feel like, deconstruction adolescence in my early 20s, when I did not deconstruct anything about my faith. I still professed to believe in God. I still thought I was a Christian. I just thought I was more of a progressive Christian. I could have my own faith with God. Like, you know, I mean, it's one step out the door, but it was like, I didn't tackle anything, no trauma or anything. It was just sort of like, okay. And now like, I'm a single mom and I've never experienced sex with anyone else, and I want to. So I did end up kind of going on a little bit of a sex spree. And the way I approached those relationships was really interesting, because they were very transactional. And they were also very not around my pleasure at all.
Yeah.
They were sort of just like scratching an itch. But it was interesting too. And I would approach them of being like, this is what it is. This is what I want from you. Can you do it? Which I was like, this is how adults approach relationships. And like, to some extent with, like, I didn't want to get feelings in the way of certain ones. I really just kind of wanted, you know, for a better term, a fuck buddy. That worked out in some cases. One guy I did catch feelings for, but that was a disaster. And, you know, just turned out to be like a fuck boy, essentially. It was my first experience. Now I know. And then, so it was just like a lot of like weird, just interactions with men. And, some of them were uncomfortable. Some of them were not consensual. Some of them I think back and I'm like, ooh, I don't know if like, I don't think I consented to that, you know, like either I got like blacked out, and it's like, good thing I was on birth control, but it's like, then I wasn't informed about STDs. Like, I never used condoms. And so it's like, there was just so much there where I was like, totally not prepared for it. Totally should not have been out doing this. But it was like also a little bit of a rebellion of being like, I'm going to take control of my life. Sure. I'm not with this like crappy guy anymore. And my parents aren't going to tell me what to do. And I didn't get to do this when I was like, you know, in my teens. So I did a lot of that, and that didn't last super long. But then I ended up meeting my now husband, and we were together a long time before we got married, but, sort of entered into a more chill, very stable relationship, like the opposite of my daughter's father. Mm-hmm. He was just very predictable, very chill. And my last relationship was just, you know, you get addicted to the drama, the emotional highs, things like that. And you think that's what love is, right? Because it's so passionate and there's so much, you know, going on. And so then I think my second phase of deconstruction started in my late 20s, where I was like, we really need to get married. And I didn't realize this till after we got married, that that was pulling from, you know, my Christian upbringing, my purity culture, all of this stuff where I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do, right? Like, I'm not... It's just, I'm a little irritated with myself now because that's like not a reason to get married. And that's not obviously the only reason, but it was just like, I started deconstructing around like 27. I think I got married at 28. And I had a huge existential crisis when I started taking college classes again. I took sociology and I took art history, and I took like just all of these things that make your brain go like, oh my God, wow. Yeah. And, so that's when it started. And then I didn't really start snowballing till like after marriage, after, and then I started getting angry, and then I just really started unraveling. So now that I'm like more like in a phase where I'm like, okay, I'm trying to like essentially live adolescence again and figure out who I am and what I want, and totally like pulling out this value, pulling out that value, and things that I thought made up of who I am and what I wanted. Yeah. And people have noticed I have changed a shit ton in the past like year and a half, like just fast ideas, opinions, everything. It's just like, I'm like, I don't like that. I don't want to do that. And that can be really hard on a relationship.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, because you're essentially just changing entirely of the amount of years that you just spent with someone. They're like, who is this person? That's right. And so, yeah, that's kind of like still what I'm going through now, but I would say it's a little bit better. It's just sort of like navigating that is so hard.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
It just feels like everything's out of control, and you just sort of feel like you have to like burn it down and start over, which I don't think you have to, but
Well, but the Rachel, unraveling makes sense. It's a great word.
And also the unraveling, the high volume of unraveling that happens in a short window of time.
Yeah.
Like Julia, when I think about the year following my divorce, there was a ton of, there's like 5 years worth of stuff kind of packed into that one 12-month period, probably for you too. So yeah, that's really, really hard. And I think that that's natural. With any sort of stage of transition, you know, with deconstruction, we're talking about kind of a philosophical transition, although it can also be a transition out of relationships.
Or redefining
of relationships, right.
Right.
I was thinking more of like communities.
Oh, yeah.
Communities like church communities, things like that. But my feedback to folks would be like, find some times, find some spaces to go slow. Even if that is, you know, Julia, one of the ways you and I have done it is through hiking, through going on walks where we have 5-6 hours together. We also do long distance hiking. So, so this can also happen over multiple days and weeks at a time, but spaces where you can go slow, where your body can go slow, you can give yourself the chance to process, okay, what is it that's actually like happening? What am I going through? What are the things that I'm interested in currently? Who is the new me? Getting reacquainted in kind of slower paces, I think can be really helpful for folks. And that's true in individual contexts and also in relationship contexts. Not feeling the impulse, oh, I've got to like blow everything up and like get out of this relationship now. But
yeah, it's like self-destructive almost, which is interesting.
Yeah,
just go there as just human beings to be like, okay, let's just start over, you know? And it's like, it makes sense why you want to start over.
Sure, sure.
But it's not as great as it sounds, you know.
Right. And you have to decide what are you starting over and what are you rebuilding.
That's right.
You know, what are the things that you're totally scrapping? Like, that's fair. Like, you can burn some buildings to the ground, and maybe that's super important. I think it is for many people. And then there are other foundations that maybe you keep some of it, or you're able to redefine it, or it was supposed to be one building and now it's becoming something different. I think there's all kinds of options. But I think what's so important to validate for ourselves and for our clients is that it's just like really fucking hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
And therapy can be helpful, and resources can be helpful, and podcasts can be helpful. And I want people to have all of those things. I wish I had more of that. And at the end of the day, it is fucking hard. And sometimes that's all to say at the end of the day.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a lot of people post in our private Facebook group, just, you know, people who are deconstructing or not, but a lot of them like have relationships where they're like, either their partner isn't deconstructing yet, or maybe they one is sort of like fully out and they have kids together and one still wants to take them to church. And like, it's just, yeah, it can be really hard and confusing. And I feel like what's devastating, word of the day,
yes,
about that is I think it's devastating to like lose your faith, lose your community, and then to like also lose your partner at the same time, if that's something that does happen, is like almost too much.
It's
so much loss. And I feel like it's, I almost would say don't rush it at that point too,
because
maybe it will work out. I mean, maybe sometimes it takes a little bit for people to come around. It is very shocking to watch someone that you've been with for a long time turn into someone else overnight. Right. But I mean, that is the point of love though, right? Is people will change over the years, you know, inevitably, and, you know, loving them through each part and seasons of their lives, I think is really a true, beautiful form of love. It doesn't necessarily mean you necessarily have to stay together, but it's what I think that love should be, and wanting what's best for them and wanting them to be happy. But it's hard too, because I know you mentioned something about your journey with queerness. And that's also thoughts that I've had, but I don't know if they're thoughts of actual queer, like being queer, or if they're fantasies that you have in your head that you never fully explored, again, adolescence, or if it's just a curiosity, or if it's a, you know, there's just so many things that are so confusing. And obviously, yes, I've been in therapy the past 2 years, and now my husband and I are in therapy, which is helping as well. But it's just, it's so confusing, I think. And sometimes I have to take breaks away from it, because I'm like, I don't have to figure this out right now. Like, I don't have to figure all of it out. And I got really stuck on this like sexuality journey, because I feel like that was kind of an in thing too for everyone for a while. Everyone was like, what's my sexuality?
Certainly.
And a lot of people were like, I'm queer or I'm gay. And I'm like, that's great if you know that you are. But it's like, it's also like, I feel like we were sort of just snowballing on this. Oh my God, what am I? And it's like, I don't really need to know. And my therapist kind of helped with that too. It was like, I don't know if this is a curiosity that I have, or that this is just something that like, or if this is something else entirely. And so I think with deconstruction, and also again, being in a relationship, it can just be hard to navigate that and hard to have those conversations with your partner.
Yeah,
totally.
You know, in general. So,
It
I know
is.
There's no easy answer for that, but it's just...
There's not.
It is then, the way that it is.
Right. And something that I remember from my sex therapy training was talking with clients, especially when it's in a couple setting, where you often only have hard choices. Right. And ultimately, my ex-husband and I decided to get divorced in therapy. And part of the work was, oh shit, we really only have hard choices here, and we will survive, but being present to the grief is super, super important. And what I always tell clients is, hey, my stake is not in whether you stay together or don't stay together, or you leave church altogether, or you find a progressive community. Like, my only stake is in your flourishing as a human being. And you get to decide in what relational context or religious or spiritual context that looks like. And fundamentalism, right, as our friend Tia Levings describes, is doctrine over relationship or dogma over relationship. So mm-hmm. I think it's really important with any relationship with our therapy clients, but also with our friends, to say, hey, like, I'm going to support you. Yeah. And you get to decide if you're going to flourish in this relationship, or if you're going to take a risk to leave it, or whatever other hard choice you make, because all the choices can be really hard at that stage.
Yeah, they can. Do you, like, I guess not statistically, but maybe statistically, like, in a lot of your clients that are deconstructing, do you have quite a bit of them that do stay together and work it out? If you have a lot of deconstructing clients, I don't know.
I do. Yeah. And I wish I would love to study this and actually have
set ourselves up to do that.
Yeah. Have some legit research.
Because I feel like you only hear like people get divorced. And I don't think, but I also have seen a lot of couples deconstruct together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And like have beautiful relationships.
Sure. Right. So my best friend from college is one, and we interviewed Nikki and Steven Pappas on our podcast, and they wrote the book Becoming Egalitarian, which is essentially like their journey of deconstructing together. And in our podcast, they shared that they're still at different places. So I think that there is so much hope for couples to stay together if they want to stay together. And there's also so much pressure from religious communities to stay together.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. like all the choices are hard, and they can also all be good too.
And if you do make the decision to stay together, I think one of the things that is really challenging, but also really hopeful for couples, is redefining what the purpose of the relationship is. I think, Julia, you mentioned this. This is true for me as well, that when so I got fired from a church that my ex and I both worked at in 2016. Is that right? No, 2018. And we realized later, like, once that was removed from our relationship, like, that was a thing, that was a common interest that we had. Our church work, our ministry work was the thing that was holding us together.
Mm.
And we were unable to find other things, other commonalities, other interests, other passions to rally around, to circle our relationship around. And, you know, one of the exciting things about the deconstruction process is, in some ways, it's like dating again. And mm-hmm. I'd encourage folks to who are going through that to consider that. You know, what are things that I'm discovering about myself? And then also, what are new things that I'm discovering about my partner? And what are possible connecting points mm-hmm. between mm-hmm. us? And it will probably look very different from the connecting points that happened while you were in religious spaces. But being open to that, searching for that, looking for those common interests, those common passion points, I think could be really helpful for folks to stay together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just getting to know each other again, but without God is the one keeping us together, and without being like, oh, well, our interest in church and stuff like that, it could be interesting.
Yeah.
Like, oh, sure. I never knew that about you. It's like, well, we never asked.
Right, and right.
Also, like, I never knew that about me either.
Yeah, me either. Yeah, yeah. I like to think that it doesn't all just end in, you know, divorce and things like that. Because I did meet a couple here who came from the IHOP church, which I don't know if you guys heard about that bullshit.
Very, very familiar.
We're getting
very
to
familiar.
Know some people that are connected.
Yeah, everyone's
with that.
Getting really familiar with IHOP. I live like 20 minutes from there.
Oh gosh.
The Heaven Beds podcast is good.
This couple came from IHOP too. And there's just, oh, there's so much. I don't know. It's crazy. I went to like conferences growing up too, that like they put on. I did go to like 24-hour worship and prayer, which I thought was like so cool, but also so weird. Like where they just never, like there's always someone in there worshiping. And then like, there's just like, anyway, It's
I'll educate you after this
please
podcast.
Please do.
I have to actually, despite the fact that we both grew up in conservative spaces, I have to educate Jeremiah about a lot. Like, he didn't know about Left Behind. He didn't know about the rapture. He didn't know about being born again. Like, you don't know about IHOP.
You lucky duck, you.
I am going to give you some education tonight.
Left Behind, man. So they are still together. They got married really young, and they do have an open relationship now. They're non-binary now. Which again can be just challenging, you know, for a relationship too, just in any of things like that. And, they seem to be doing really good. In the beginning stages of the podcast, I did have them on and talk to them about that experience. And so it's just interesting, and sometimes it works out, and you just have to be open. I think it does help if you're both deconstructing at the same time, just because then you have solidarity, and then you have someone who truly understands like what in the world you're going through. And I think that in itself can create intimacy. You know,
And in my former relationship, we were deconstructing at way different paces. It was hard to create commonalities.
And often people are at different stages or paces, but like if you're in the same book, that's like you can work with it if you're in the same book. Mm-hmm. I think you and your ex might have been in different books at that point.
Volume 1 and volume 5.
Yeah,
that would be challenging and hard. Okay, Cameron, do you have any questions? I sort of like took over the last 15 minutes for them before we wrap up. I know you like were defiant and were like, I'm going to fuck who I want to growing up. But we weren't like that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I kind of had a reverse story to you guys. Like I said, I've always been kind of objectionable to why can't authority? Jesus, I don't even have a word for it.
I don't even know what that word is.
Clearly.
And I had, a lot of my sexual upbringing was rooted in trauma for myself. I hypersexualized myself because I basically raised myself. Raised by a single mother, but I really didn't feel like I ever got her approval. So I had a lot of performance that I needed to tie to sex, that was the only way I would ever get like feminine approval. Thanks, Freud.
That's gutting.
Yeah. And then when I realized that, I like rubber banded the complete opposite way, and like I thought for a long time I was asexual, like I've had all the sex, I'm good, you know what I mean? But so it's just been, you know, me kind of hearing the other side of things. And so and honestly, the conversation you guys just got into regarding the rebuilding and potential reconstruction or elimination of a relationship to that is like really applicable to my life right now. And so I just kind of sat back and so you're all good. I don't think I have any follow-up questions. I'm still kind of reeling a little bit from the conversation.
Yeah. Good. Well, I'm glad that you got something out of it, because I know when I first was like, you know, telling you about this conversation, you were like, well, I don't know if I'll have much to add. So I just, because, you know, you weren't heavily in purity culture. So, but I'm glad that you were able to.
Thanks, guys.
Well, you know what?
You're welcome. We just gave Cameron therapy.
You can bill me. Don't worry.
Jeremiah's line is, you don't have to have grown up in the church to be fucked by the church. And even though all of us to some extent did, those messages expand into all kinds of territories outside of the church. So
we're going to make a t-shirt.
We are all still healing.
Yeah.
Yes, you should make a t-shirt. You don't have to be in the church to be fucked, by, the church.
Yes.
They'll find you.
I love it.
Yeah. Purity culture, I feel like in the 90s too, was like a very universal experience for a lot of people. So certainly, you were hit by it, probably not as hard as if you weren't in the church, but you were still hit by it.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. I know you got to get out of here, but I enjoyed our conversation. I feel like we could have probably talked another hour.
I
love conversations that end that way. I love when they end and I'm like, I wanted more.
Me too. I'm glad it ended that way. That's That's such a compliment. And again, yeah. Thanks for having us. I love your podcast. And I know that we chatted a while ago and had talked about a swap. So if you're still interested, I'd love to email you both about that.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah.
Awesome. I would love that.
Awesome.
Well, I hope you guys have an awesome Friday night.
Yeah, you too.
And yeah, we'll talk soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rachel. Thanks, Cameron.
Thanks for listening to Cheers to Leaving. Please consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Subscribe and share with your friends and others who are on a journey of deconstruction and are looking to expand their horizons.
If you're looking for a community that understands what it's like leaving religion and are going through the same process as you, consider joining our Facebook support group. Be a part of the conversation, meet like-minded individuals, and get support. You can find the link in our show notes. We love hearing from you, so drop us a message, share your thoughts, or suggest topics you'd like us to discuss in future episodes. Email us at cheerstoleaving@gmail.com. Take care and catch you on the next episode of Cheers to Leaving.